I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hawkeye Nation podcast, HawkeyeNation.com. Andrew Downs back with you once again alongside Rob Howe. What's up, Rob?
Well, we're starting this a little late because I got my hair cut today, which is something new for me. It's probably my third haircut, but first since March. So,
how often do you typically get a haircut in normal times? Wait,
once every month, maybe 2 months, something like that.
Was this like the longest your hair had been since you were a punk kid in high school or something?
If it wasn't, I can't remember when it was longer, but I started to just kind of, and maybe it was my own insecurity, but I started to sense people looking at me like, what is going on with this dude? I had kind of had like a Reverend Jim Ignatowski and Albert Einstein feel going on, and I did take a before picture, so I may post, for people to have a laugh on Monday, I may post the before and after shots, but I looked down, you know, around the chair after I got out, and it was just hair everywhere, and I have a lot of gray hair, too, so maybe it makes me look younger. At least that's the story I'm going to go with.
Yeah, exactly. Why not, right? It certainly will make give your neck a little less strain holding your head up. Well, Rob, as we sit here on Monday, as we have for several Mondays in a row, it feels like things could change pretty quickly. And by the time this podcast is out to the listening public, things may be different. But as we sit here today, I'm trying to think back. I think it was early June, maybe, when it really felt like there was a lot of confidence for things getting back to normal, or at least some level back to normal by the fall. And I remember Gary Barta talking about, you know, they were still planning to have a full Kinnick Stadium on game day and all of these things. Obviously, as June continued, it kind of fell apart, and then we've been putting the pieces back together for the last couple of months. But as I sit here today, I guess this is about as confident as I felt since that early June time that we will see Hawkeye football in the year 2020. We can talk about whether or not we should and what has changed and what has happened between now and then, but it does now feel like there's some reporting happening outside of the likes of Sir Yacht that I do trust a little bit more. And obviously there's still a lot up in the air, but it does feel, at least for me as I sit here today, it feels like there's maybe even a good chance that we will get Big Ten football yet in 2020.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to frame it, Andrew, as a good chance. I'm still not going to go all in with my mental commitment to this, just because I still wonder that, you know, they met, I guess, on Saturday or yesterday, on Sunday. I can't remember. They met over the weekend. I guess maybe the medical people got together on Saturday and formed, a presentation to present to the presidents and chancellors on Sunday. And we're recording this, on September 14th, on Monday, September 14th. And as Andrew said, things may have changed by the time you even hear this, even though we try to post it as soon as possible. But, from the reports are out there. Again, we're not hearing anything directly from the Big Ten. You have to hope that some of these reporters have direct lines, and I think some of them have been around long enough where they at least have sources that I think are reliable. I'm hesitant just because of, as you said, things that have changed so much just over the last 2 or 3 months, and you know, we get ourselves, you know, kind of hopeful and yeah, it's going to happen. And the bottom line is you still have to have 9 of the 14, and there were 3 last time that voted to play football. Iowa, Nebraska, and Ohio State. Are there 6 more presidents and chancellors who feel comfortable playing after, 34, I think this is the 34th day since they decided to postpone the season. That is the question. And until they take that vote and we hear that they are ready to go ahead, it looks, you know, a couple of reports that it would be October 17th, and we can talk about kind of the re-entry. And I had an interesting Twitter exchange with Maurice Goodson yesterday, just mm-hmm. on his concerns yeah. about these guys getting back into shape and being able to play and not trying to rush it so you can get into the national championship picture. So plenty more to discuss here on that, but I'm just going to – I want to be cautiously optimistic so I don't get myself – too high and then get disappointed again.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. As I've said a couple of times, you know, until somebody tells me that those presidents are considering changing their mind, I'm not really going to buy into it. And it does seem like, as you said, that they were presented with a new batch of medical information, possibly, you know, rapid testing supplies and things like that. And then obviously you're seeing kind of college football happen on campuses around the country, and some with fans, some without fans. But I think the next maybe few days, few weeks will certainly tell us a lot about how successful or unsuccessful this first real big weekend was, and whether or not that will play into it. But it's... I'm withholding like my full, you know, excitement as you are, because until we know, you know, and Dan Patrick reporting this morning, or you know, his source had kind of told him, you know, these schools are in and these schools are out. And when you do that and you look at, okay, you're saying both Michigan schools are out, both Illinois schools are out, and Maryland is out. You assume Rutgers is out. There goes the nine votes already. So I guess, does this have to be all or none? I mean, obviously the vote doesn't have to be all or none, but the Big Ten is a league that has prided itself up until these last 34 days or so on being very solid, having one face. You know, they are together. They are as together as any league in the country, and they certainly don't seem together right now. Can you see a scenario where they go forward with 8-9 teams playing a season and just trying to put it together like that and letting the other ones, hey, you opt out, that's fine with us?
Yeah, I think everything would be on the table, yeah. But then, so the teams that vote to play, are they the only ones whose votes matter in terms of that? And
right.
then maybe... you know, if it's eight schools that decide to play, obviously that's one less than the nine that you need to be able to go ahead. The majority vote to play football. You know, if the eight that decide to play, you know, if the other six say, yeah, that's fine, but we want our share of the pie, then what happens? You know, because that's one of the big selling points in the Big Ten for member schools is it really doesn't matter, you know, what the results are at the end of the year. Everybody gets an equal split of the pie. Do you do that if some of these teams opt out? And I suppose it could get messy, and it's already been really messy. We kind of touched on, you know, Ryan Day coming out with a public statement. I think that was on Friday,
yeah.
maybe, and James
Franklin
as well.
Pretty strongly worded one as well, yeah.
Yeah, and criticizing the Big Ten, I can't remember ever seeing that.
No.
And I started following this conference from a journalistic standpoint in 97, and you just never hear ADs. I have never heard Kirk Ferentz criticize the Big Ten, ever. I've heard him criticize the NCAA, but I've never heard him criticize the Big Ten.
Mm.
That's just kind of one of those unwritten, or maybe it is written, rules that you don't turn on your league. And we've seen a lot of that in the last 33 days, which I guess magnifies how important this is to people and how unusual these times are. But both Day and Franklin kind of walked that back a little bit on game day on Saturday, saying, you know, they it's not that they have a problem with the decision, they just have a problem with the communication. And I really think that's pretty much the root of all this. Big Ten, and we've talked about on here, Andrew, the communication has just been terrible, and it continues to be here. We're not really, you know, we're relying on you know, unnamed source reports here, and that's what has me a little bit hesitant that we're going to get set up for something here that's not going to happen or not what we think is going to happen. And You know, and if you get yourself where you're not starting till whatever, the 17th or the 24th, you really have no margin for error. We've seen how many, three Big Ten or three Big 12 games, were canceled or postponed this weekend. We're seeing different, you know, the COVID is definitely affecting college football. It's not like this stuff's going. I know people are saying, well, everybody else is playing. Yeah, they're trying to play, but there's certainly it certainly has not been without hiccups. And you have to figure that the Big Ten, whenever it gets back, is probably going to be faced with those hiccups as well. And you really, you know, that schedule we initially saw, there were dates built in for if you had those issues. Now there really isn't. I mean, if you're trying to get to 6 to 8 games, are they going to be able to do that in time to be able to get themselves? Because ultimately the reasoning here is to play for a national championship, right? That's why you'd start up earlier.
I would guess so. Yeah, I mean, I think that has to be. It has to be part of the equation. And as you said, if you're looking at October 17th, which we can talk about whether or not that's even realistic at this point for most schools. Yeah, you're talking about no room for error, having a Big Ten championship game in early December, and then going right into, you know, whatever a bowl season or a playoff season would look like. And if you're not going to hit that window, I guess what is the point of rushing this? If all you're going to play for is a Big Ten championship, and even that would be kind of a watered down Big Ten championship if several teams decide not to play. Then what's kind of the point of all this? Is it to get some money into the coffers and get that TV deal done? Is it to get these guys some reps and put some more tape on film for guys who are trying to go to the NFL in 2021? Is it just to kind of erase some of this bad PR and give your fans a bone and say, hey, look, we're trying to do what we can and here's some football, even though ultimately it's not going to mean anything? It's going to be really interesting to see how they pull this together and kind of what the other leagues are going to be willing to accept from the Big Ten at this point. You know, I would hope that there hasn't been a battle line drawn between the Big Ten, Pac-12, and then the other three leagues so deep that it can't be overcome, or that they can't be give a little leeway to these leagues. I don't know if the Pac-12 is talking about playing, but certainly for the Big Ten, because if the Big Ten's only going to play 8 games,
how could they play any more than that?
I don't think they could. And so if you're an SEC team that just went 10-0 or 9-1, you know, if, let's say 9-1, if your Oklahoma goes 9-1 and Ohio State goes 8-0, you know, how do you make that determination? It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Again, assuming that actually something happens, and it's going to have to happen quick, Rob. And let's talk a little bit about your exchange with Maurice Goodson, because he's been very vocal about wanting to play, wanting to get this thing going as quickly as possible, but within reason. And I thought it was a good point that he made on Twitter and that you and he were kind of talking about, which was, I want this to happen. I want it to happen now, but I also want my kid to be safe, and not just from the global pandemic we're all experiencing, but from a conditioning standpoint and a preparation to play standpoint. Again, we're not going to be going out there and playing against you and I, and no offense to you and I or any other. I mean, we saw the Sun Belt go 3-0 against the Big 12 this weekend. So no offense to these lower tier leagues, but these aren't going to be preseason games. These aren't going to be non-conference games. I mean, you're going to start with Big Ten competition, and you need to be ready to play. Iowa just got back into a workout mode. Wisconsin is currently out right now for at least a week or a couple of weeks before they could even begin working out again. What is a realistic time frame? Is 4 weeks possible? Is 8 weeks more likely? I've seen those two numbers and really everything in between thrown about a little bit. I don't know how getting ready in this short of amount of time is going to be good for anybody.
Yeah, and you know, we go back to you know, early in the summer when Kirk Ferentz was talking about, you know, that 4 to 6 week window, and they have trained, but the training was very fragmented this summer, and they talked about that last month or maybe at the end of July, that, you know, a lot of workouts were, you know, not paused, but just were not 100% attendance because of testing, contact tracing. So it wasn't like Iowa had its normal summer conditioning leading up to training camp. And then they got into training camp and had, I don't know what it was, maybe a week and a half. They got right on the precipice of being able to practice in pads. And then the Big Ten shut that down and then eventually postponed the fall season. But they haven't been in pads and had contact since December. So, you know, I heard or saw Barry Alvarez say he could, you know, they could be ready in 3 weeks. That seems really optimistic to me. I mean, he knows more than I do. I mean, he's obviously been around the game a lot more and knows what his athletes have been able to do, but they're basically shut down, you know, till the end of this month or close to the end of this month. Like you said, Iowa missed a week earlier this month. They're doing 12 hours a week, basically just lifting, some light, maybe film work and things like, it's not like they've been that gearing up conditioning stage leading up to training camp. So there has to be some conditioning and then you go into training camp and then you get into pads. I mean, I got to think it's at least a minimum of 4 weeks. And that's kind of what I said to Maurice yesterday on social media and said, you know, 4 to 6 weeks seems like a logical window here. I know Harbaugh said, what, 2 weeks last? But he's a little off anyway. He's a little,
yes, he is.
I don't think he's got both oars in the water most of the time anyway. And I think he often speaks from the cuff instead of speaking from reality. And, they better be careful here. You know, you're talking about safety as the reason why you're postponing football. You know, safety in turn as it relates to the virus. You can't compromise the safety of getting players back into the necessary condition and shape they need to be in to play. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So, and we're already at the 14th at this point. And, you know, so when's the earliest that this vote happens and they're able to get back to, you know, gearing this thing up again? Does it come later this week? I mean, October 17th still feels a little bit maybe overly ambitious to me. But again, I'm not an expert in this area, and I'm just going based off of what we've heard and what we've kind of been told from, you know, some coaches and players before this. And that a parent of Iowa's starting running back has concerns, and he played college football. You know, that to me, at least, that adds validity to the case that it's going to maybe take a little bit longer than people want to get Big Ten football back.
I guess there's just so much that's going to be interesting. You wonder if the vote happens today, tomorrow, the next couple of days, you know, how quickly is it just go? If you want to play, go. You wonder if it'll be reported as a unanimous vote, and then teams will opt out, so that way there is unity. We all want to play. We've all been convinced by this new medical information, whatever that may be, and we all think this is a safe thing as a league. But individually, you know, Rutgers decides we're not gonna do it this year. And then, how quickly can you do this? How quickly can teams get back? Is that quick enough to be a part of a playoff or bowl system or whatever? If not, what's the rush? Are we still looking at an October start if you're certain that you're not going to be a part of the other three leagues? There's just so much still up in the air. And it's just, as we've said, hard to really kind of get your hopes up.
Another interesting angle to this, which of course every day it seems like there's some weird monkey wrench or oddity that happens. Sean Wade declaring for the NFL draft this morning and opting out for Ohio State when his dad has been one of the most vocal parents in this group. And I get it. It's separate. It's kind of the Kevin Warren and his son situation. His son needs to do what's best for him. And the father, I think, I can't remember the father's first name. But I apologize for that. But he's said along, it's about more than Sean. Yeah. It's about all these student athletes getting a chance to play, and his son needs to do what's best for him. But Ohio State's had two of its best players, two first round picks, already opt out, and Sean Wade and offensive lineman Wyatt Davis. And Sean Wade said today a lot of it has to do with the uncertainty. So at least from what he's hearing, it doesn't seem like he feels like a return to the field is imminent. And maybe that's partially too. He just got to the point and was like, listen, at this point, we're getting, you know, we're not going to start till the middle to late October at the earliest. And I don't want to put myself in that position with, the chance of me being a first round pick, a good chance of me being a first round pick with all that guaranteed money. So it'll be interesting to see, as you said, how quick will this happen? And the longer it goes, how far does it push the season? And then are there more guys that are going to opt out? Which teams are going to play? Which teams aren't going to play? If you're reducing the number of teams, like we said earlier, if there's only 8 teams playing, then when you have a team or two that gets compromised by COVID, it even impacts the league even more, because then there are fewer teams playing. So this, you know, I hope if it's safe to see Big Ten football, I've always wanted that all along, but this isn't going to be without hurdles. And I think there are still more to clear here. That's, again, why I'm going back to what we talked about earlier, Andrew, and I know you're in the same boat. I'm proceeding with caution here.
If the Big Ten had not canceled, if they had come out 6 weeks ago and said, we're still not sure, we're going to try, you know, we're kind of keeping this in the air. I feel like they'd be in such a better position. It feels like when they made the decision to cancel, it was kind of like, okay, everybody go home. We're done. And rather than kind of continuing to work on these things, I think that's maybe the biggest thing that I see with the cancellation, because I can respect their decision to not play. There was a lot up in the air. We don't know exactly what medical information they were going off of, which is an issue in its own right, but I can respect them for making that call. A lot of entities around the country, around the world, have made that decision on several big events, several seasons, several things like that. We've all sacrificed. We all understand what we're facing here. And so I think most logical people can see what the Big Ten did and understand, in general, why they made that decision. But if ultimately you were going to, if there was any room to reverse that decision, if this was a possibility, even as we sit here in the middle of September, and we're looking, you know, 6 weeks out, it feels like they jumped the gun too quickly, while knowing that the unknown is still out there. They had no idea what the medical information was going to be like 6 weeks from that date, or what testing was going to do. And I get that makes the decision harder, but it also would have given them some leeway to, had they not made that definitive decision right then, to have teams who are maybe more ready to play right now, to have a schedule that is kind of ready to go, and have some of these answers already figured out, rather than, you know, scrambling in these next few weeks to get all this put together. It just, again, we can talk about whether or not it was the right decision, but I do think now, especially that it seems like they're considering walking back this decision, tells me that they weren't as solid in this decision as maybe they needed to be when they made it initially. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I'm kind of writing something in that regard as well, I hope. I'm trying to put something together, putting my thoughts into a Word document, so to speak. We don't have a breaking news sound effect here, but Iowa has released its latest COVID-19 testing. So let me read what we have. Please. Here. The University of Iowa Athletic Department conducted 677 COVID-19 tests for the week of September 7th through 13th, so through yesterday, which was Sunday. 24 positive tests and 653 negative tests have been received. As part of the return to campus protocol, tests began March 29th. And the total numbers now, Andrew, 221 positive tests out of 3,489 negative tests and one inconclusive. So 24, I'm bad at math, but 24 out of 677 this week.
So, I mean, it's...
So 24 more is not insignificant.
It's not. No, it's not. And, you know, it's funny how these... these numbers change, or I guess the way we react to these numbers change so drastically, or have changed over the course of this pandemic. I mean, even a month ago, if 24 people had if this was the announcement a month ago, it would have said, whoa, it would have been, you know, oh my gosh. But, you know, then, you know, 3 weeks ago we had 93, so now 24 doesn't seem all that bad.
Another interesting aspect of this, and I saw this touched on yesterday, I can't remember if it was Pete Thamel or another one of the national reporters. One thing to keep in mind here is, I think if you're talking about protocols and, I don't know, what do you call them, benchmarks or requirements, if the Big Ten does play again, I got a feeling they're going to be the most stringent of anybody in terms of thresholds. Mm. So, and that kind of ties into what we're reading here on the latest Iowa results from COVID testing. How often are they going to test? Obviously, as you said earlier in the podcast, those rapid antigen tests are, that's a game changer. That's been the game changer. If you're looking at something from what happened, you know, early August to now, that's the biggest difference. Being able to test and have a test come back within 15 minutes with results, that not only helps you in terms of, you know, catching it earlier and testing more often to be able to find it quicker, but the contact tracing, what we talked about earlier in terms of Iowa having to, you know, having position groups and roommates and things like, you know, different groups of people this summer having to quarantine and shut down, a lot of that has to do with contact tracing. There may only be one, two, three people that have it, but if that person or those people have been exposed to 10 to 15 others, that changes everything. So the antigen testing to me is the biggest change. If the Big Ten does come out and say, hey, we're going to go ahead with this, they're going to hang their hat on that testing as the possible, you know, as the reasoning to what's different now, you know, from what was happening 33, 34 days ago. And then I think they're also going to be really, really harsh with what teams have to do to be able to compete.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I hope that the Big Ten has learned a lesson from these last, you know, this last month or plus. And when they do make this announcement, if they do make this announcement, if this vote is held in the next couple of days and they decide to proceed, and you know, even if they can't come out that day with a full schedule or anything like that, even there are going to have to be things that are worked out. What they need to be is very transparent and very clear. What did you see the first time that changed this time? If it is that testing, details on that testing. How are you going to get these tests? How often is this testing going to happen? The Big 12 laid out a real good plan for testing, and then, you know, what happens with the myocarditis, you know, these heart echoes and things like that that they're going to require before a player is able to come back. These things need to be laid out very clearly, because the Big Ten has lost all benefit of the doubt when it comes to lack of communication at this point. And so even though you're now going to, again, assuming they make an announcement at some point that football is going to proceed at some point this fall, even though this announcement is going to make people happy, that doesn't change the fact that you need to have some transparency and clarity, because it's also going to make some people upset, Rob. And we know that for sure. Nothing is black and white in this virus, and nothing is apolitical. People are going to be upset if the Big Ten decides to play football. People who thought this was the right decision, players will likely opt out at that point. So it's going to be very important for Kevin Warren to be very available, to not just go on the Big Ten Network and kind of dodge some questions, but to be able to answer these things, to put out, you know, a 10-page sheet of, you know, whatever, of guidelines, of this is what changed, this is how the vote went, this is, I hope that we get more clarity on whatever happens in these next couple of days, because I fear that if it doesn't pass, we will kind of never hear about that, and it will kind of come out that, yeah, you know, they weren't convinced by the medical stuff, and it just was a non-starter. Whether or not that's true, I think that's what we'll hear. And I hope that if it does pass, we don't hear, hey, it was unanimous vote, we're all good, we're moving forward. I hope they've learned their lesson from the negative PR they've received over these last 34, 35 days. And can give us some real transparency about, because even I don't know if this is the right decision. I don't know if canceling was the right decision or if resuming will be the right decision. Ultimately, we'll all find out in the end, I guess. But I'm going to need some transparency to convince me that of why they are reversing their decision, if that's ultimately what they decide to do.
Yeah, I agree with you, Andrew. And ideally, what they should do is when they come out, they I don't know how much they want to admit to messing this up, the message up, and communication and transparency from early on, but to, you know, gain control of the message, because I don't think they've ever had control of it. So they're not regaining it. They would gain control of the message to come out and say, okay, this is why we postponed. These are the reasons why we postponed. And here's a detailed, as you said, reasoning as to why we've decided to go ahead and reverse that and play. And I think they can do that, and reasonable people will accept that. You're not going to reach everybody, and not everybody's going to be satisfied. And there are going to be, you know, I won't name names, but there are going to be people that say, you know, they are admitting they were wrong. Whereas I don't think that's the case. I think things have changed in the last 33 days, those rapid tests being a huge part of that. One thing also to keep in mind here, Andrew, some of the reports we heard yesterday national reporters were saying that the meetings went well and, you know, the case was made and it looks good. What are those? Are those sources coaches and ADs again?
Right.
Because I think a lot of the miscommunication or the disappointment here is because some of the reporters have gone with the ADs and the coaches. Those are their contacts. Their contacts aren't the presidents and chancellors. I could almost guarantee you that, you know, Pete Thamel and Adam Rittenberg are not lined up and not talking to, maybe they're talking to Warren, but I would be highly doubt that they're talking to the people that are actually voting on this. So there is some aspect in my mind of mind reading here, that whoever was in that meeting, whether it was the 80s, the medical people, and Warren, along with the presidents, they're trying to read the minds of these presidents and chancellors and hoping that this presentation was enough to get them to change their minds. We don't know that's the case. For me, again, I'm not trying to be glass half empty guy. I'm just trying to be, to try to look at this. I'm skittish now after we've had, you know, the rug pulled out from us certain times here throughout this process. I want to make sure that people don't get their hopes up too much and get let down again. Because it's almost like, Andrew, that we're set up now that, like you said, if the presidents come down and vote this down again and don't have a reasoning why, man, it's been ugly, yeah. But it could get really ugly.
Well, we'll see what happens over the next few days, and obviously we'll have it covered in full at HawkeyeNation.com, so stick with us there. Rob, one thing that did happen this weekend for sure that we all know of is we got to see some college football, some Power 5 college football, some major college football happening. How much did you watch, and kind of what was your feel about the atmosphere? Was it different than you thought it would be? Was it more strange? I guess I will say I was bracing myself for more strangeness than I actually felt. I think when I actually turned on a game and kind of lost myself into a game, it really just kind of felt like a normal college football Saturday. And yeah, there were some weird things and some shots of you know, sparse crowds or no crowds that would bring you back to the fact that we're in a global pandemic. But for the most part, I will say at least on Saturday, it felt like a college football Saturday, more so than I maybe expected it to.
Don't you feel like part of that is we were prepared by watching some other sports that play already without fans,
yes,
like the NBA and
absolutely
stuff? That for me,
yes,
that was the case.
Yes. It's a really good
point. You felt
point
that way? Yeah.
I do.
It just, because I think the other sports have done a really good job in terms of even baseball, you know, with the piped in or however fake crowd noise they use on TV. It gives that feel when you're watching it on TV. Obviously, when you're there, that's the big difference. But I hear from athletes and coaches that they're able to tune everything out that's happening off the field anyway. Don't know if I buy that fully, especially when you're playing at home and you get that, you know, that energy and that extra push from the crowd. But I really didn't notice it that much. I not at all. Like you said, maybe when they pan to some crowd shots, the thing that stood out to me was the sloppiness of the play.
Yes.
From what was the game? The BYU Navy game, I guess, was last Monday night after we talked. That was just, Navy looked like it hadn't played football in years and they hadn't practiced and they hadn't. I guess we did talk about that on Tuesday because we didn't record until Tuesday last week. But watching the Iowa State game with the drop passes, man, and missed tackles, it was. And that's to me something that's kind of in the back of my head, too, when we're talking about Big Ten football and them coming back. What's it going to look like?
It's,
you know,
it's,
I mean,
yeah,
any football's, I mean, I just enjoy watching football, but it's hard when it's not played well. And it's, you could argue it's the sport that needs the most practice for continuity and cohesion. You know, you're talking about, you know, line play and, you know, timing with the quarterback and receivers. And obviously for Iowa, it's certainly, you know, you have a new quarterback, mm-hmm, that's going to be playing and several new offensive linemen or offensive linemen that are in different spots than they were before. So that to me will be one of the more interesting things. And, you know, we talked about the Big Ten, you know, you talked about the Big Ten maybe should have waited. And I think it could have waited longer. Obviously, whatever it was, whether it was the myocarditis reports, the lack of testing, whatever spooked the presidents and the chancellors into saying, that's it, we're pulling the plug. I don't think the SEC starts until the last weekend of this month. Am I correct with that?
I think you're right. Yeah. The 26th. Yep.
So I don't know what the rush was. They could have waited till the end of August, even the beginning, yeah, of September, and just said, hey, you know, we still don't like what we see. I mean, the SEC is waiting all the way till the end of September. So, I mean, if the Big Ten were to start on the 17th, that's what? They'd be 3 weeks behind, which isn't an enormous amount of time to make up. But I'll be interested to see what the quality of play is in the SEC, because that's really the standard right now. But, you know, those schools haven't played in a long time. It will be interesting to see, because did you watch much of the Iowa State game?
I did, yeah. I saw quite a bit of it. And as you were talking about the sloppiness, it really made me think of, and I heard Matt Campbell talk about, you know, it's really hard to have a full speed kick return or punt return,
right,
in practice. And we saw that with Iowa State. They got burned on two of those, a kick return and a punt return. We saw the Raging Cajuns, Louisville or Louisiana, missed two chip shot field goals. So I think, mm-hmm, when you're talking about some of this sloppy play, special teams is going to be a place where it's definitely going to rear its ugly head. Although I, as an Iowa fan, I feel okay about that, because we've got as solid of a kicker as maybe we've ever had in Keith Duncan. And if you're talking about teams with you know, coverage issues, we've got one of the best return men in the game in Amir Smith-Marset. And so you know, looking forward and prognosticating, hoping that Iowa gets on the field at some point. The quarterback is certainly a question, but I do think the special teams that Iowa has is probably a big advantage.
How many games do you think they need to play in order to put themselves in the college football? Because my original thought for the spring was six in-division games and then play the Big Ten,
yeah,
championship. And I'm wondering if that's enough, if they start, you know, October 17th and give yourself some off weeks where you can, so in case there are postponements, if you can get to that 6 or 7 game threshold and then play a championship game, I'm wondering if that's enough. If, and you know, we're kind of wondering also, does the SEC get to 10 games? Does the Big 12? I mean, the Big 12's already had games canceled. Do they get, how many games do all of these conferences get to, and how do you measure that?
That's kind of the thing you wonder. You hope that the Big 10 is kind of talking with these other conferences, and then certainly with the College Football Playoff Committee, and then Gary Barta, who heads up that committee, is a good connection there. But because it'd be easy for the SEC or Big 12 to say, well, if you're only going to play six or seven games, you're not there. But then ultimately, they may only end up playing six or seven games. And so I think it will really depend, Rob, on how many teams ultimately decide to play. And so let's assume that the Big Ten moves forward and eight teams decide to play. Well, if the Big Ten says, hey, every team's going to play each other, we're going to do a seven-game season and then have a conference championship, I don't see how anybody could look at that and say, well, that's not enough. Right. If 11 teams play and they only play six games, maybe there's more of a question there. But I think if you can get six or seven games and a championship game, I think that has to be... Again, at some point, you're just going to have to understand nothing is normal. This is a weird year. It's weird for everybody. Let's have some grace here as a college football entity and allow the Big Ten to kind of, with their tail between their legs already, come back into the fold here. And whatever they can kind of put together, we will then judge it all on its merits at the end of the day, because there will certainly be teams who don't play their fully scheduled. I mean, Iowa State plays at TCU a week from Saturday, and TCU didn't play this past weekend because they had a bit of a COVID outbreak. And so as we sit here today, it seems like that game will be on, but that could change between now and then, and there's not a lot of room to make these games up. And so if the Big 12 or SEC or ACC is sitting too high on their horse right now, that may come back to bite them ultimately too, when Clemson is 7-0 and they're trying to get them into the college football playoff, and they said, well, Ohio State can't only play seven games and still get in. So I would hope that that they're already kind of in these conversations. They're having these conversations. I hope that Kevin Warren kind of has it, back channel, a handshake deal with these other leagues that, hey, if we can do this, you're going to let us kind of into the party, right? I would hope that that's already been considered. But I guess at this point, hoping for the Big Ten to do things the right way is maybe a fool's errand.
Yeah, and he thought, I think I'll go to my grave thinking that he thought the other conferences were going to cancel when the Big Ten did.
My favorite thing on Twitter that I saw this week was the most normal thing in 2020 was the Cyclones losing on Cy-Hawk week. it was a weird day Saturday, waking up, and all over my Twitter feed, at least, there was Cyclone fans getting ready, right? It's game day. They're all excited. And even though they can't tailgate or go to the game, they were, watching it with their families. They had their gear on. They were excited. Once again, a hyped Iowa State team that maybe is going to be the best team in the history of their program. And Iowa fans who were really kind of down in the dumps, man, the rest of the world or much of the rest of the country was gearing up for game day, and we were kind of left out cold and trying to decide, what to watch and when to watch it and how much to watch and when to start drinking. But by about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, that had all flipped, at least on my social media, and Iowa fans really relished the fact that Iowa State got thumped by a Sun Belt team in their own stadium, and didn't just get beat; they got dominated in that second half. There's no doubt about it. Just a really kind of an interesting day to see that flip, and then see Iowa fans really kind of the Schadenfreude, right? The relishing in somebody else's pain that went on Saturday afternoon, and has really kind of carried on through the weekend. At least we had that,
was,
Rob. At
that,
least
the
we
worst
had that.
Thing, what made matters worse for the Cyclone fans is that the Iowa fans had nothing else to do except annoy them.
Exactly. So
I got something else here as likely to happen when we're recording these things. Vanessa Miller from the Cedar Rapids Gazette says, and I saw this, I think you and I announced this earlier today, Iowa will not have a spring break next year and will start the spring semester a week later than it already planned. So this is good news for basketball.
Yes, and let's kind of go there with college basketball, because that, as we've talked about this a lot, that there's a nice gap there if most schools are sending kids home at Thanksgiving and asking them not to come back until at least.
Did you ever do anything crazy on spring break?
No, never did. I've been skiing in Colorado on spring break with my family since I was like six, and so it's like the least party spring break you could ever have. I go and stay in a cabin with my parents.
So it wouldn't have been devastating
for
you had they canceled spring break when you were in college.
No, definitely not. No, I never went down to Panama City or anything like that. Never did. How about you?
Yeah, I went to Florida. I was in Fort Lauderdale once and Daytona once, and we'll leave it at that.
I think I saw you
but
on some
I'm
of those
sorry,
MTV
I,
spring
I interrupted
break
you, but I was just thinking in my head, man, that's got to – I mean, that's – spring break that's for a lot of kids is that's one of those things where you really look forward to. So that's something that no spring break. And they normally start, I believe, after MLK Day.
Yeah.
So that's going to push it almost to the end of January.
So, yeah, you're looking – I mean, so theoretically, you could almost bubble a college basketball, the entirety of college basketball, from Thanksgiving to almost February. And that's enough time to get in an entire Big Ten schedule, isn't it?
Yeah, you would think you'd be able to get some non-con in.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely. Ooh, I like that.
So maybe
that.
Do a non-con around, starting a little after Thanksgiving or maybe for Thanksgiving weekend. Get that on TV, get that as, put it front and center. Here's college basketball non-conference bubbles happening all over. There's one in maybe, I don't know where they put it, Omaha or Minneapolis or St. Louis or Kansas City. In terms of Iowa and Iowa State, and then, branch them out at different spots around the country. I think people would eat that up.
I think you're exactly right. Ooh, that's a lot of fun.
And they did say this week, I can't remember who the national writer was, that by the end of this week, we could have a date when they're going to target to start college basketball.
I like that. I like that they're thinking ahead here. They're certainly working on this, and that's going to be great news when that comes out, when they start to talk about what a college basketball season will look like, what the non-conference will look like, what their plans are for a conference season, and then what an NCAA tournament could look like. I don't think this is possible, Rob, but you and I didn't talk about this. I think it was last week the ACC coaches came out, led by Coach K, and said, hey, we'd be all for an all-inclusive NCAA tournament. 350 teams or thereabouts. I think I saw somebody had counted out to like 348 when you have several, like Oklahoma State is banned from the postseason this year and things like that. But what are your thoughts on an all-inclusive NCAA tournament?
Unnecessary.
I think you're right.
There's a lot. As somebody who has covered Iowa basketball back to the late 90s, 97, I've seen a lot of really, really bad teams that have come through Carver-Hawkeye Arena early in the season, directional schools and MEAC schools. I don't need to see those teams in the tournament. I just, no offense, and I'm happy that those those student-athletes have a chance to compete and they come to Iowa and Iowa State and they get the paychecks and it helps support their athletic program. I do not need to see that. I just think they – plus, they're talking about in terms of we're still going to be dealing with the virus then. Why would you want to have more teams and more people exposed? If as we talked about, Andrew, if they're able to start this thing around Thanksgiving and go through January and get as many games as they can and then just maybe piece together February schedule that might be able to lead up to, conference tournaments possibly, and then the big dance in March. Just focus on that. Just focus on there'll be enough. The resumes will be enough where they don't have to jam 300 teams into a tournament bracket. Man, you imagine having to fill that out?
It's funny. I said I'd be all for more college basketball. I'm never going to say no to that, especially in a year like this where I expect the Hawkeyes to be good, and I'm worried that we won't get as much college basketball as I'm hoping for. On the other hand, I really don't want to see the 2-seed Hawkeyes lose to like the 87 seed in the first round. I do not need that in 2021. Quickly before we get out of here, John Rothstein has put out his Big Ten preseason preview. And as you would expect, he's been pretty high on Iowa and Luka Garza for sure. But he has Luka Garza as his Big Ten preseason player of the year, which I think that'll be a unanimous thing from everybody who makes these lists. But his Big Ten power rankings, he does have Iowa atop the field. He expects them to be the best team in the Big Ten this season. He's got Wisconsin 2, Illinois 3, and then Michigan State down at 4. So some good news for Hawkeye fans who didn't have a college football game to watch this season and are excited about the possibility of a full college basketball season coming up.
Yeah, it seems like those top four are kind of in a tier of their own.
They do.
And you always kind of have to put Michigan State in there, even though it lost a lot from last year, you know, the point guard being, you know, Cassius Winston being the biggest part of that. But yeah, I think you put Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois in a hat in terms of what those programs have returning, and then Michigan State just because it's Michigan State and you know it's going to be good every year. I think he had Michigan way down in the middle. That was interesting because Michigan's been pretty solid. That doesn't speak well to what Juwan Howard is able to put together there. And then Ohio State seems to have fallen off a little bit as well. But if other teams are rising, certain teams have to fall too. But I'm just so interested to see what college basketball is going to look like. And who knows? It could have both football and basketball both rolling, you know, with a regular season through December or into December. Because I think if you're the Big Ten, you have to at least. Do you know when? I know they moved back the selection day for the college football playoff. I want to say it's like the third week of December.
I think that's right.
So you could conceivably play your season all the way until maybe that second week of December if you're the Big Ten football. And then still play a conference championship game, kind of like basketball does. A Big Ten basketball title game for the Big Ten tournament is on that Sunday of Selection Sunday. Maybe football can do that maybe on that Saturday or Sunday when they – I think maybe they decide on a Monday, though. But have that weekend, and that would be the best if people are like, well – the Big Ten only played X number of games, and should it really be allowed into, or will it be picked? Can we get a firm evaluation on which of the, you know, we're thinking Ohio State would be that team, but if you play that championship game on that Saturday night before they pick, you leave that lasting impression of, okay, man, this team deserves to be in there. You can kind of put yourself on the big stage for the Big Ten championship game and give the people in the selectors, the people on the committee, something to think about.
Yeah, similar to the Big Ten basketball tournament, traditionally you kind of be in that last game on Selection Sunday, and you know, you get a big win there and it may bump your seat up a little bit there. Rob, before we go, man, I'm going to ask for a prediction. I'm going to make one myself. I'm going to stay optimistic. I think that when you and I reconvene a week from today, we will be talking about a Big Ten football schedule. I don't know that we will know the teams, but I think we will know the dates. And I think we will have a game day date for Iowa football. Do you agree?
Man, I'm so unsure on this one. I want to say yes. I'm going to say yes just to be optimistic.
Yeah, that's
I'm still
where I'm at too.
Apprehensive.
I'm not really
Couple
convinced.
Things
I'm
we just, didn't touch yeah. on. They did one of the two parts of the presentation this week, and it wasn't only medical, but they also presented TV and a schedule to the presidents
and
chancellors. Kind of gave them an outline of what that would look like as well. So that's something to think about in terms of. So you hope, Andrew, that when this does come out, they give you everything. They give you, hey, we're playing, and here's when we're playing, and this is who's playing. Because, like you said, if only eight teams play, they got to blow up the divisions, right? Because they would, if you look at it and go just by what the speculation or on, you know, the sourced reports are, if you figure that Michigan and Michigan State are out, Illinois and Northwestern are out, that evens up the divisions. But if Rutgers and Maryland out, those are two from the East that would be out, and you'd have to blow up the divisions and kind of just make it a traditional round robin. But then how do you decide who plays in the championship game. You would have to have some type of tiebreaker set up as well. I'm complicating things more than I'm making a complicated situation more complicated.
Well, it's going to be very complicated. I guess the first thing is we have to take that first step and decide whether or not we're going to play football this fall. Again, keep it to HawkeyeNation.com, and we'll have all of this covered throughout the entire week and you know, hopefully into a football season here when we can start doing more and covering actual games. Rob, what do you have coming up on the site this week people should be looking out for?
I'm hoping to do a prospect podcast with Jeremiah Pittman, defensive lineman from Illinois, who's committed to Iowa in the 2021 class. Working on a column, as I said, just kind of on this Big Ten. I haven't written a lot about the overall conference situation, so working on something there on that as well. Iowa offered a tight end, James Kearney. He's not from Kearney, Nebraska, but he is from Nebraska. They offered him a scholarship this week, and he's a tight end in the 2021 class. And he was committed to Miami of Ohio. When Iowa offered, he decommitted from Miami of Ohio. I think there's some other schools sniffing around, including Nebraska. So interesting there. That could be Iowa's tight end in this class. And I will have an interview with him and a story up on him shortly. Tomorrow, I will recap the Hawkeyes in the NFL. I saw TJ Hockenson scored a touchdown, and the Packers won. So yeah. Christian Kirksey and Josh Jackson. A lot of good stuff going on with the Hawkeyes in the NFL. So we'll have a roundup on that on Tuesday at some point.
Fantastic. Thank you, Rob, as always. Hopefully we don't sound dumb when we come on the podcast next week. I feel like we're pretty optimistic this week. I hope some of that actually pans out.
Yeah, I do too. I think that rapid testing, I think, is the key to this thing, but it's just a matter of convincing academic people that this is worth doing, and that's always a hurdle, and I just want people to be cautiously optimistic. I'm going to say there is football, and I hope there is. I've always hoped there would be if it's safe to do, and if the medical people think it's safe to do, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't.
I agree completely. Thank you, man, as always. Thank you for listening, and go Hawks.